a little bit insecure and nervous about what might happen next. That way you have to keep looking this way. So I'm really glad to be with you guys. Ken's story is completely true, except for the fact that I was in 17C and he was in 17B. And I literally, as I was sitting down, was like, excuse me, is that the EPC Book of Order? And then this was probably a little forward. I was like, who are you? Because I felt like I would know him, and I did. He said, I'm Ken Pretty. I said, I know your name. I used to answer the phones at Hope when I was an intern back in my 20s, and it was a time when Ken was a big part of helping Hope get established and get planted. So it was just a real nice divine appointment on that trip that we got to talk. And so when Ken called me and said, would you come? I was like, Ken, I said so many things. I don't even know what you want me to talk about. And so we talked about some different ideas, and basically we just put a lot of good sounding words up on a screen so that you guys would think that I was smart, because I don't even know what that means. I'm trying to figure it out, but this is what it means. I've thought about it a lot, and what I want to talk to you guys about is the environment that's created around your ministries and the way that you do church together. And so I want to betray my message and tell you three things before we start. The first is that environments always matter. They're not neutral. You can't not care about what's around what you're doing. It just doesn't work that way. I was recently took some residents that we have in our program at Hope, took them to hear a marketing meeting, this marketing conversation in a really cool space in Richmond. You couldn't hear anything. It was, the ceiling was high. They didn't mic it. They didn't stop the presentation and move people around so they could hear. And we left, and I said, you guys, do you think environment matters? It was a great talk that nobody could hear. And that's just one of those things that just has always stuck with me and strikes me through my whole life about what we create around the messaging, what we do around what we really do. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So environments are real, and good environments are redemptive, and good environments are relational. And what I mean by redemptive, again, huge buzzword, but what does redemption mean? It means a recovery mission. It's a rescue mission. It's taking something back. And I think that as ministers and leaders in the church, we're really interested, right, in taking people back from a life that isn't all that they can have and introducing them to this full vicarious life in Jesus Christ, right? That's what we're doing. I mean, seriously, if we're not doing that, let's just do something else, because this is hard work. So if we're doing that, if we really are about that, then we need to think about the ways that we create places where we can rescue back, we can recover, we can buy back from what the world offers and offer something that's so much more than you can find anywhere else. So that's what we're going to do today, is talk a little bit about that. And I'm hoping that by the end of this time together, you'll just have some practical tools that you can take back to whatever context you're in, whether it's a small church, a large church, a ministry around the church, children's ministry, prayer ministry, whatever is around what you do, that you would have just some good questions to ask yourself that might help you as you continue to look for ways that you can offer Jesus Christ in your community. So first thing I want to do is tell you a little bit about myself. I put a slide up here because I think it represents well my childhood. I grew up in a military family, and we generally looked like this, which is disheveled and not sure about what's happening. Look at my mom. I mean, she's like having an existential life crisis in this. Look at her. She's like, dear God, what just happened? Look at these four children. So we had just adopted my brother from Korea. We moved around all the time growing up. I went to 7 schools in 10 years. And so I was the perpetual new kid in every environment. And then every time we moved, we probably went to 6 to 8 churches to try to find our home, to find a church home. And so I've been to almost every kind of church that there is: Nazarene, non-denominational, every mainline church, Bible studies, fellowship dinners. I have been the one who raises their hand, who's here for the first time, over and over and over again. I am like a professional newcomer. That's what I've done for my whole life. So maybe this is why I care so deeply about this, because in so many ways, as I look back at the story of what God's done in my life and why he's brought me to this place, this is what matters. This is what I remember. I have a such strong memory of being in eighth grade. On the first day of eighth grade, it was about November, I was coming in as a new kid, I had my lunch, and I opened the cafeteria, and there was the cafeteria. And I don't know if you remember what middle school's like, but when you enter a cafeteria and you don't know where to sit, it's pretty devastating. It's a pretty strong memory, and I remember feeling like, who will let me sit with them? And so all my years in student ministry, and I was taught by Pete, and it sort of brought my own experiences too, it's always, who's the kid in the corner? Who feels invited right now? How do people feel when they walk into this place? Because I know what it feels like to be new over and over and over again. And it doesn't have to mean necessarily that your church has tons of new people every week that you should care about this, because you know, you and I both know, that you have people sitting in your pews and your chairs who do not believe, who have not yet embraced the gospel, whether or not they say that, they're still not there. They still need their hearts to be receptive to the gospel. So whether you've got a ton of people coming every week that are new, or you have the same people that you always have had, I want to encourage you to be thinking about the structures that you're building around your ministries. So that's what we're going to do today. A couple of things just to get us started. Environment. Let's define environment. It's an aggregate. It's things that come together, and especially this point B. It's social and cultural forces that shape the life of a person. So back to the point, environments are never neutral because they're the social and cultural forces that shape a person as they come. And what I mean by environments, I mean experiences, I mean relationships, I mean the actual place. It's not just what it looks like when you walk in, although that is a component. It's also who are the people, what is the ways that you invite people, how are they getting connected into your community, what is that little ministry like? Does it represent what the mission of your church is? What this is really about is what you say from the front, does it match up with what people experience in the chair or in the pew? Because we're good at that, but you know what? You know what I've noticed about our culture today, and I'm sure you guys have too, is that people's meter for hypocrisy and not being who you say you are is incredibly high. We are a culture that has been advertised to, and we now know that we are manipulated by messages. So you're going to stand up here and you're going to give a message, and you're going to be looking at people who are used to being manipulated, and they're going to want to know, do you back up what you say with what you do? Do the things that come out of your mouth from here, we want to welcome you, we want you to be part of it. Is every part of the experience back up what you say? And I know that you're the ones, a lot of you, who are up here doing that part, but it's also your responsibility to make sure that what's happening right after the message, right before the message, around your church and other ministries, does it support the words that you say? If you're truly missional, if you really want to reach people, if you want to help them be receptive to the gospel, what can you do with that? So that's what environment means. Environments are, as Andy Stanley says, the messages before the message. What messages are being sent before the message? What messages are being sent after the message? Being in so many different environments, I've just experienced this so much. I was in a church, and I was coming to speak at the church, so I needed to leave early for the next event, and we walked in, and the church was full, and it was really an awesome church service, and there was a row that was saved for people who were late, and so the woman approached the usher and said, hey, you know, we need to sit here because we're going to have to leave, and he said, you can't sit there. And she was like, okay, well, we just need, you know, and I thought for a second, because I help with our teams, our ministry teams on the weekend, and I know people love rules. They just want you to tell them what to do, and they forget to think sometimes about the heart behind what they're doing. And all that was just an experience like that. It was just a, hey, this is just a rule, and I'm not going to think about it for a second and think about what is the heart that we're doing in this, what is the heart with which we do things around here from every little piece of a place that we work together. So maybe this will be a place where I want to make sure that we get this out on the table, because I feel like this is sometimes can happen amongst us, which is this idea that, but God is sovereign. God, we're in a Reformed theology. God is the one who draws people to himself. God is the one who does that work. He's the one who brings people to us. We're not, you know, out there trying to get them, you know, that's what God does. And I agree. I do believe that God is sovereign. I believe he's, of course, the one who does the work in someone's heart. And you can deliver an incredible message and do everything right. And that doesn't mean that a person is ready to receive Jesus, because praise be to God, that's not our job, because that would be really, really hard. That's not our job. Our job, though, is to work hard, because God is sovereign and disciples work really hard. Now, they don't necessarily work hard to do the work that God does, but they work hard. Think about in Scripture how hard the disciples worked. I think about Jesus feeding the 5,000. I don't know about you guys, but like, have you cleaned up a church like function ever? Like, have you ever been the one who has to clean it up? We just had a gathering. We had 300 people come for a volunteer kickoff. So we catered Moe's. Well, Moe's came, and they decided to bring that they were going to serve from one table, all 300 people. So I'm looking at my team, and I'm like, this is not going to work. So all these people start running around. We're trying to serve people food and clean it up. And I'm like, whew, that is hard work. So Jesus does the miracle in the Gospels, but you know what? Who's doing the hard work? Have you guys read the Gospels just to follow Jesus? He is so intense. He keeps like a really intense schedule. His disciples must have been so tired. There's a few places in the Gospels where he says, come away, let's get some rest. But they get interrupted before they even get to rest. And Jesus still addresses the ministry that's there. And I believe that Jesus wants us to get rest and let's abide with him. But wow, they worked really, really hard. God's sovereignty can never be an excuse for our mediocrity when it comes to the things that we build around us. And I'm not talking just about your perfectly crafted message. I'm talking about all the little pieces that contribute to the environment that we set up for people. And yeah, I'm so passionate about it because y'all, I've been the newcomer. And I'm telling you, you can lose them before they walk through the door. Who cares about your message if they already made a judgment call on who you are and what you're about before they even got through your front door? 2 Corinthians, I think about Paul talking to the churches and being like, I was beaten, I was hungry, I was, you know, everything that he's been through, he works really hard. And this isn't to say that I don't think that you guys work hard or that we work hard at Hope. I mean, of course, ministry is really, really tough. I came out of private practice counseling. I'm in full-time ministry. There's a spiritual part to it that takes a burden that is unlike anything that I've ever experienced. I know you guys feel that. We are responsible for the care of our congregation and the people and their hearts. I get all that. What I really want to have you guys do is maybe be excited about little things that affect people, that create a spirit that is welcoming and inclusive, that makes you feel like, yeah, we're doing the work. We are just getting people to the offer. God is going to do the rest, but we want to get them there well. So Jesus used environments. I think, again, just to support this point, Jesus used environments. Sometimes when I read the Bible, I think to myself, you know, it looks big and it's got a lot of words in it, but for all the years, for the support that this is supposed to be for our life, for the fact that we not only are building our hearts around this, but for those of us in vocational ministry, we're actually building our whole lives around this. It's actually not that many words, like for as long as it's been around. And so I feel like every word in Scripture counts. And I love this verse that I put up there in Mark 3. You can also find it in Luke 5. It's just this little sentence. Before Jesus starts teaching, he says, I'm going to need to go out in this boat so everybody can hear me. Jesus cared about people being able to hear him. He cared about the things around him. He cared about using analogies that worked for the people that he was with. So when he talks to the woman at the well, he talks about living water. And when he feeds the 5,000, he says he's the bread of life. You know, he uses the things around him. And sometimes I fear that we get stuck here and we forget that that is a principle that we need to apply to modern day. We need to use the things around us to support the messaging that we do as well. And we need to stop and say, wait a second, can everybody hear me before I get going here? Am I making sure everyone's gotten seated? Does everyone here feel welcome? The other day at Hope, sometimes our service is really full, one service, and I said, hi, everyone here, I know that this is big and overwhelming, and you feel like you're in the personal space of the person next to you, so let's just acknowledge that. Glad you guys are with us. You know, just, hey, we get it. We want to talk to you in a natural way. We want you to feel like this is something that you can be a part of that we're doing here. So that verse, Jesus used environments. He used the things around him. And I think that when we evaluate our context, we need to use the things around us, too. We need to make sure that we're culturally relevant. And I know that's a buzzword, but it's an important word. What works for your people? You know, Hope is in a place where we have a lot of people who aren't necessarily church. They haven't come from a church background. They wouldn't know what the word potluck meant. They just thought, they would think it's a lucky pot. They wouldn't know what we were talking about. And so we had a recent event, and we were like, what works for our people? What do our people do when they're not here? What do people like in our community? Now, you can't answer that for every single person, but my guess is you can actually answer it pretty well. You live in your community. You know, you're right there with them. And so for us, we were like, you know what our people like? They like food trucks. Let's just get food trucks. We don't need to have a potluck. We don't need to do, let's just have food trucks come up here. You know what else they like? They like bluegrass. Let's just have bluegrass. You know, this whole idea of let's just reach people where they are. Let's do things that feel natural for the people that we're serving, rather than things that we're stuck doing because it's been done that way for a long time, so we just keep doing it. And I would encourage you to be thinking like that, to have that mindset as an elder, as a teaching elder, a ruling elder. Does this work? When we started this thing, is the reason we started it still exist now? Is the reason we started it still true today? Has it evolved to something else? And that thing that it evolved to, do we want that? Does that thing meet and support our mission statement? How do we think about the things that are created around us? And I know I'm in a newer context where sometimes it's easy to make changes, but I'll tell you, it's not easy to make changes in any context. Change is change. You know it's change when you hit resistance. That's the best way to know that you're making a change, is when somebody doesn't want to do it. So if you feel that way and you feel that stuck, it's just sort of asking those questions, asking the right questions of the right people. So I'm getting ahead of myself. Here we go. This is sort of a gathering verse for hope and for you guys. And I think I might have, it might not be up here right now. I'll just read it to you guys. It's from Romans 14. Make up your mind not to put any stumbling block or obstacle in your brother's way. And at Hope, that's what we try to do. We just say, you know what? We want to remove every obstacle. You know, I like this verse a lot because of the two things that happen in this verse. First of all, the verse is intentional. Make up your mind. I feel like if a verse is going to be intentional with those words, probably that means that if you don't make up your mind, you're going to go the other way. If you've got to make an intentional choice, that generally means the unintentional choice is going to get the opposite result. So intentional, let's make up our minds to what? As our brother is on his way, that's the sovereign part, as God is sovereign. As our brother is on his way, make sure that you remove those obstacles. What do I need to do to clear a space for somebody to receive Jesus Christ? What do I need to say when I'm up front? You know, one of the things we talk about at Hope is that we always say our names. We don't want to come up front and start talking and assume that everybody who's there knows exactly who I am and what I do. Because by doing so, I'm already creating an in-here mentality for people who might not know. So we like to say our names when we come up front, just a little thing. But hey, we don't expect you to know who we are. I was talking to a friend of mine who's Catholic, and she said that she went to a mass recently. She said, you know, something the priest said really stuck out to me. I said, what was it, Sarah? And he said, I've never heard a priest say this before. And he said from the front during his homily, I know some of you haven't been here for months. Now, obviously, you guys know the Catholic tradition. That's, like, not okay. You have to be there every week. So he says, I know some of you haven't been here for months, and I know some of you only come on Christmas and Easter. And I just want you to know, I'm really glad you're here today. And if you aren't here for a while, I'm still going to be glad when you come back. I mean, y'all, that's like revolutionary for the Catholic Church that he would say that. So my friend, who's a nominal sort of seeking, remembers that. You know why? Because they said what they expected was there. They were prepared for what they expected to be there. I recently taught a class on the Bible, and I said, hey, let's just take a survey. Who's read the Bible all the way through? And person after person said, nope, 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 confusing, never have, that's why I'm here. And as that happened, rather than me being dismayed about the biblical literacy of our community, I was actually really excited because everyone was being honest. And I think they just represent, which is probably in all of our communities, they just actually felt like saying it. And it was this great, refreshing experience where it was like, okay, cool, let's all get on the same page. Let me help you get started. Let's not pretend that we're something that we're not. I'm teaching a class on how to read the Bible because we expect people in our community to not be reading the Bible. See, when you prepare for what you expect. So if everything you do in your ministry or in your church feels like you need to have already been in church for a long time, then that's a message that you're sending to your people. When I started a women's ministry at Hope, we didn't have a building. So we didn't really have anywhere to go. And so for lots of reasons, we just started with a morning ministry. But pretty soon into it, I said, we cannot do just morning women's ministry, because what am I telling women in our community? That if you work, you're not invited. And perhaps if you work, that's not what you should be doing. And by the way, if you're single and you support yourself, we also aren't inviting you either, because we meet Thursday mornings with childcare. And that was painful to me until we added a night. We added the same thing at night. It's like, what are you saying to your people with the offerings that you give? And we don't do it. We don't do it all right at Hope. One of the things we've been trying to do is figure out how to help people feel welcomed. And so what I did was I asked people, and I said, hey, do you know someone who's kind of newer here or would come to church if you asked them? And we had people come, and I gave them a handout. It was sort of like a secret shopper experience. And I said, will you come in here, and from the time you turn into the parking lot until you get to a seat, will you tell me what you see and experience? What's it like when you're in the parking lot? Like, what's it like when you come through the front door? What happens next? What happens next? What happens next? I had our whole deacon team do the same thing. And I said, now, I want you to leave. Right now, this is between services. Leave, and I want you to drive up here at 11:03 because that's the time that new people come to church. So get out in your parking lot at 11:03 if you want to see what it feels like. So all of them left. They all filled it out. We had a bunch of people fill it out, and I had a friend of mine who is not a believer come to church, and she came just during the week one day, and I said, Whitney, you're a graphic designer. You're sort of an artsy interior person. Tell me what you experience when you come in here. So she opens the doors of hope, and she stands there, and she goes, I don't know where to go. She's Episcopal. We don't have a church that's traditional. She's like, right away, I'm confused. Am I supposed to go down that hall right there? Well, meanwhile, I'm in the building all the time, so I'm thinking I can see the building from the top. I'm like, it's one room and one room. That's all the whole building is. But when she walked in, that is not the experience she had. She said, this is confusing. That's weird. Does someone stand behind that desk? What am I supposed to do when they're standing there? Where do I put my kids? How do I know where to put my kids? Where are the bathrooms? And literally, I just took it to heart. I'm like, okay, we need a sign. You know, we need a sign that says where to go. And guess what? If someone stops to look at a sign, then I know they're new. So that's cool, because then we can, like, kind of help them get engaged, because the only people who look at signs are new people. So it was just a great experience of saying, can you slow down and think about what you're doing and ask the hard questions, even the ones you really don't want to ask, like, ooh, is what we're doing actually working? Is it setting out and accomplishing the purposes that we expected for it? So three questions for you. This is sort of just your practical takeaways for today. Following the rules of engagement is just a phrase I use to describe this piece, because I feel like sometimes we come into church land, and remember, many, many churches, and now I travel and speak a lot, so I'm just in churches a lot. It's like we enter into an alternate reality, like we've left the world and come into a new culture. And I think that what I want to say is, how can we make the spiritual life more natural? How can we create experiences that feel more natural for people? Not because we're at all watering down the gospel at all, but that we can get them to a place where it feels natural to be there. It just feels natural. The normal things in social relationships, the normal things that happen in healthy environments also happen here. So we don't hold on to things that don't work anymore. So how do we figure that out? How do we ask those questions? How do we follow those rules of engagement? The first one is, who are you expecting? Good question. Who are you expecting? And we're like, well, we're expecting the world. Okay, great. But in this time, when you are going to do, let's say, this women's event or this MOPS group or this, who's going to come? Who do you think is going to be there? Who do you want to have be there? What are they like? What do they do during the day? Where are they going to be coming from? Who are they? Who are those people? How do you ask those hard questions? Sometimes when I'm going to lead a women's retreat, I say, well, who are you expecting? Will there be anyone there who's not a believer? And they're like, I don't know. So, well, are you asking people to invite friends or not? Who are the people that are going to be there? Not that everything has to be evangelism. Obviously, discipleship, teaching, time away, spiritual disciplines, all that's great. But let's pick something. These are all good choices, but we can pick one thing. Now, we may hit lots of other things on the target, but let's make sure that we are at least aiming for some kind of bullseye when we do things. So knowing your questions, asking the hard questions, secret shoppers in your community, you want to know what things look like, feel like, sound like, ask someone who doesn't usually come to tell you what they experience. What's it like when they come through the door at 11:08? Were they greeted? Did they have a seat? Did they find a place to be? Did they feel like the person was natural and it was comfortable? Did they feel like someone was trying to sell them Mary Kay products, or did they feel like it was someone hosting them and just welcoming them into the house? Second question, who are you expecting? And then the second question is, what is success? What would be success in that environment? And again, a lot of us, we want to reach the nations. We want to introduce people to Jesus Christ. Yes, we do, definitely. But at your men's ministry event on Wednesday night, what would success be? And the way we get to success, the way I ask that question is, what do you want people to be saying to their friend or to themselves as they leave? Do you want them to say that was fun? Do you want them to say that was helpful? Do you want them to feel like they had a place to belong? What is the feeling that you want to create in someone? What are you hoping will happen that when they leave the event, they feel something? Maybe you're thinking, I just want them to come back. I just want to make sure that they come back. So maybe the last thing that happens is you say, you know what? It was really awesome you were here, and we really hope you come back. Maybe they'll catch that as they leave. So what does success look like? What would be success? I was recently with a women's group, a leadership team, and I said, okay, guys, what is success? And one woman said connection. The next one said teaching. The next one said time together and, you know, sort of spiritual. I said, okay, great. All of these things are great, but we only have like 6 hours. So what do we really want a woman to feel? And they said, we want her to feel connected. I said, well, that changes everything else about that event. Because if connected to one another is the main thing, then it's going to look different than if you said, for instance, Bible teaching. That would feel different. So talking about those things, I know it's sort of intuitive. It seems sort of basic, but it's amazing how few of us actually do this because it's really hard. And then, of course, there's all that goes inside of us because we're like, well, if I say who I want to have there and I say what success looks like and then it doesn't happen, then I feel bad, you know? And gosh, we might even have to like really seek the Lord and pray for what will happen, and then something awesome does, and glory to God, it's awesome. So this is why we think like this. So who are you expecting? What is success? And then the next question is, how are you going to get there? If you know who you sort of want to target and you know what a successful thing will be, how are you going to get there? How are you going to do the hard work to get there? And here's a couple axioms I use with our leadership residents. There's a good thing and there's a best thing. Do you want the good thing or the best thing? And so this is such a simple thing, but yeah, no, I don't think these people like working for me because I came into college ministry and we had talked about setting up college ministry, what it was going to look like, and we talk about every little piece of it. Okay, when they come through the door, how are they going to feel? What are they going to feel like? Are they going to feel insecure? Are they going to be looking for someone? Is someone going to greet them? When that person does greet them, what's going to happen next? I don't know about you guys. Have you guys had that kiss of, have you ever been in an event that's like a kiss of death because you know nobody and there's like 20 minutes of nothing and you feel yourself transforming into an eighth grader all over again and you're like, oh, where's my phone? I'll pretend like I'm texting someone. I feel so uncomfortable. If you haven't had that happen to you, go somewhere and have that happen to you. You will get so passionate about the experience people have when they come into your building or to an event. Because if you've ever had that happen, you know that like we sort of turn inward and you dig a pit that then the whole program, you got to be trying to dig back out of that pit because the person felt so, so uncomfortable. I have seen people leave before they got into a room and ooh, that hurts because that moment was so uncomfortable. So you start there. What are we going to do? So how are we going to do that? How can we help people feel comfortable? So with college ministry, we're like, well, let's have drinks like Snapples and waters out for them. So when they first come in, they immediately have something to do because that helps people feel more comfortable if they can do something right away. So we did that. It was right about to be set up, and the intern was setting up, and I looked at the stuff, and I said, Brandon, did you get the ice? And he said, no, I didn't get the ice. I just thought I would put the bottles out like this. I said, Brandon, if you were coming to this event, would you want your drink cold or room temperature if you were coming? He's like, okay, I'll go get the ice. So I was like, the ice, it stinks. I hate getting ice. Who wants to buy 40 pounds of ice at Food Lion? It's just, it's hard. But it was, what's the good thing and what's the best thing? You know, we want you to have a cold drink when you come. We're going to make it cold. We want that to be part of it. We want you to stand there and feel comfortable because you're holding a drink. And you may think, oh, these things are so little, but I bet you there's someone in your community who cares like this. And it may not be you, but you might need to get that person on your team. The person on your team who wants to break out events in 5-minute increments, what's going to happen in this 5 minutes, and then this 5 minutes, and then this, how are we going to create this feeling? If we're trying to get to success, we recently had a women's event. All we wanted women to feel was understood. We want them to feel understood. We want them to feel comfortable and understood by the time that they leave. We had 46 women who had never been in our building who came that night. Now imagine if I just assumed that nobody knew was coming, and we didn't plan for anyone to need to feel comfortable in our environment, but we did. And I believe that God rewards that. And so these women came, and a lot of them started coming to Hope from that day, from that event. So those 5-minute increments of how will I get there? What can I do to get there? I've got one picture I want to show you guys of this example of a good thing versus the best thing. It's a little bit grainy, but what you see here is a time that we were having a missions focus at Hope, and the missions focus that we took on was trafficking, and we wanted to raise awareness and raise support for IJM, and that's what we focused on for about 4 weeks. And I had this team of guys, young guys in their 20s, who were helping, and they had this bright idea where they would hang light bulbs from a wire, and they're like, it'll look cool and industrial, and we'll hang it in the worship center. And so they start doing that, because we're like, okay, cool, you want to do it? Sure, yeah, hang light bulbs. Okay, well, it was like an electrical nightmare. They almost burned the building down. We had to call an electrician. Apparently, you can't just wire 27 light bulbs into an extension cord and then plug it in. Who knew? I didn't. I just let them do it. So they did all that, and it was an enormous more work than they expected. They were going to do it in one night, and it was like two all-nighters to just get it ready before this mission's focus and do this. But what happened was they had the idea that each light bulb would represent a million people that are trapped in slavery in our world, and it was 27 million. And when I got up that Sunday and said, hey, guys, do you see these light bulbs? This represents the 27 million people who are currently trapped in slavery in our world. It was so powerful. It was a simple thing. It was a good thing. It was way harder than they expected. It was hard work, but yet it captured the attention of everyone in our midst because we use the environment to bring people into the message. And I didn't do it. I didn't have to do it myself. Somebody else did it, and they did it well, and it was an incredible, incredible way. And every week for that 4 weeks, I got to say the same thing. Do you guys see these light bulbs? 27 million people. It was a wonderful way to bring hope to a very, very difficult subject to talk about, even in churches. It's just hard. And it was just this great, great picture of this idea of how we can use the environment. I was hanging up a whiteboard for my Praxis residents just yesterday, and I said, well, just pull it off and just slap it up there. And one of them turned to me and said, Nicole, is that the best thing? don't repeat me. And then we had to measure it and make it straight and perfect. So that's a little bit of my heart about environments. I hope that if that's something that's helpful to you, or you think to yourself, I'm not sure how to translate this into my context, I'm going to leave time for questions. I'd love to help you. I've been in lots of different environments. This isn't just for contemporary churches or growing churches. This is for the ways that you help someone's heart be softened to the message of Jesus Christ. Whatever that may be, whatever environment that's in, how can we work hard to help those environments support the message? So my final thought is this question of, do you believe this? Do you believe that this is important? I think we all have to wrestle with that. Wait, this feels hard or different or not what I wanted. Do I believe that this is the core and in the core of Jesus' message? Because we don't want to do stuff that doesn't matter, and none of us want to do stuff that doesn't matter. And sometimes you can come to things and be like, oh, none of this mattered. They just wasted a lot of time on something that didn't really matter. So the question is, do you believe this? Do you actually believe that this matters? And I want to bring something to your attention. I was in my devotions, and I've been reading through Luke. And I got to this passage in Luke 9, and I just hadn't noticed it the way I did this time. It's Luke 9, 46 through 56. And what I hadn't noticed before is a theme that was through this 10 verses, not just one. The first part, as you guys may well aware, is that Jesus' disciples were arguing about who was the greatest and who's the greatest among us. And Jesus, you know, stops that conversation. But then I hadn't really noticed the very next thing that happens. And the very next thing that happens is one of the disciples says, there's someone who's driving out demons in your name, Jesus. Should I tell them to stop? And Jesus rebukes that too. And then the very next thing that happens is that Jesus is walking through a Samaritan village where he's not welcome. And his disciples say, should I call down fire? And that's when Jesus says, I'm not really a Greek scholar, but basically shut up. To them. And three times in a row, if you read it, they're all in a row. And it's like, who's the greatest? Who's doing stuff that's not with us? Who are these people who don't like us? Let's do something about it. It's this gathering of us. And Jesus says, shut up about that. And I got to tell you, I like to remember that we are more like the religious people in the Bible because we're religious people. Like, we're doing that work. We're more like them than not. We're more like the disciples than not. And so if that is in the text, if for 10 verses Jesus devotes our attention to the fact that the disciples' natural bent was towards us, they're not with us, they're not associated with us, they don't do it like us, shouldn't you stop that? Because they need to be with us. They need to be doing it this way. And he's like, no. And you know they catch it. The Holy Spirit comes and you start seeing in Acts that they catch it. They catch that. They're like, no, we're not going to be about us. Don't be putting stumbling blocks in people's way. I don't want to hear that about this regulation and that regulation. You got to do it that way, because that's not what Jesus was about. And they didn't know it then, but they started to know it later, right? We've got to know that our natural inclination is going to be to huddle up and just keep doing things the way we've been doing them, because it's easier and it feels comfortable and we know the people who are coming. And we gotta work hard to encourage one another to continue to evolve, to continue to look. You don't think you've got new people coming into your community? Guess what? You've got children, and they are the future of the church, and they are going to wonder why you do things a certain way that don't seem to matter or be relevant. They're going to wonder, or they're going to leave. So we all have that generation among us. We all have the responsibility to continue to evolve, to ask the hard questions, to say, is what we're doing natural? Are we helping the spiritual life to feel natural for people? Are we saying, hey, I know I just said the word redemption. That's not a normal word that people use, so I'm just going to define it. Do we say, hey, I'm going to read from Luke, and I know you may not know where Luke is. It's in the New Testament. The Bible's in two parts, old and new. See, I'm preparing for people to not know that. So that's what we do. We relentlessly remove obstacles from people so that God, who is sovereign, can do his work. Let me say a prayer, and then we can have questions. Father God, we have staked our lives on the claim that Jesus is the Christ, he is the Redeemer, that you have saved us from ourselves, and that you offer us life to the full. And we have ordered our lives around that. And so, Father, as we gather as leaders and ministers and people who care deeply about your church, I pray that you would infuse us with strength for the work that is ahead, that we would count trials, whether they be small or large, just as glory, just as an opportunity to know you better, Lord, and that you would give us the faith and the vision to see to the next thing, to let go of the things that hinder, to remove obstacles from people's way, to be bold in proclaiming the gospel, but to not get hung up on the things that don't support your work. And it's in your name we pray. Amen. Well, thank you, guys. I don't want to keep you, because the meeting goes on and on. So if you have anything, though, that you'd like to add or comment, I'd love to address anything that I can or hear from you if you've experienced any of this in your own community. Yes. Okay. Awesome. That's a great, because you're having them sit in your midst, and they don't know how to do that. Oh, you couldn't hear it. Okay. He said they don't have that many children in their congregation, but his wife has started to meet with those kids. They're starting to come more. And the first thing that she does with them is says, what are we doing in a worship service and why? Great. Don't expect those kids to know what's happening. How can you help them engage? I always have my kids tally how many times the pastor says Jesus. And so you can see if they can get it right. Keep them engaged. Yes. I'm not going to answer that question. I will say that the person who taught me the most about environments was Pete Boel, and he is a man. But I do think that you need to know. I do think that obviously women. I do sometimes teach on gender differences, and there's an interesting study about the brain, and it does support some of the stereotypes of men and women. And one of those is the relational intuitiveness is more developed in women. So sometimes they do. They do get this, but they need, when I go to women's groups, they need help with vision. They need help with what are you doing? Let's not just do this because we've always done it. A lot of times they're volunteers. They're not under somebody's leadership in a sort of regular way. So when you go in and say things like that, they're really inspired to think about. Tell me about the woman you want to invite, the event that you want to come to. What do you want to come to? You got stuff going on in your church that you don't want to come to? Start asking those hard questions. Make sure that the target audience, someone in the target audience, actually wants to come to the event that you're putting on. That would be important. Anything else?
Other resources you could suggest, like books or...
No, I just wrote that. But you can have my PowerPoint, I guess. I am following like younger, you know, sometimes we'll think about, okay, young adults ministry. So we read Relevant Magazine. What is getting shared a lot on Relevant Magazine? What are people commenting? Just trying to get a little bit of a taste. If you're working obviously outside of your own, you're not the target audience. What do you do for that? But the most important thing is to find somebody in your target audience and ask them what they want. I think sometimes we forget to do that. Find them, even if they're not engaged. Say, I know you're not engaged with us. What do you want? What could we do? So one of our young people wants kegs on the patio. We have not gotten that approved, but that's our current best idea that we have for young adults. Anyone else? Anybody else have thoughts, comments, questions? I'd love to help you think this way, or in just anything I can do to encourage you, would love to do so. So that's it. Yes. Oh, yeah, sure. Thanks, Pete. So this is sort of along the same lines. One of the things that has happened in our community is a lot of people come. We talk to them. We realize that they know less than they want to, but they also feel a little ashamed. We live in a very culturally Christian place. It's sort of like my best analogy is like when you don't understand our political system and you're an adult, you feel embarrassed by that because you feel like you must have missed fifth grade civics because I don't actually get it. But you can't find any objective source to tell you anything. If I just said, somebody tell me without all your passion and biases what you really believe, like what is a Republican, what is a Democrat? You know, you can't find that kind of information. And I say, you know, that's kind of how Christianity is. It's pretty tough to find just some basic, hey, this is what it is. If you missed the boat and you just didn't hear, you were sleeping on Christmas and Easter for the past 36 years, here's just a start, just that we're going to honor your search. And we're going to honor you as a smart person, but we're not going to dumb it down, but we're going to create a conversational tool that can help you get those basics. And this is a good question you could talk about on your staff. What's the six or seven things that you really want people to know about faith? Just a few, not all the big words, just like, what do you really want them to know? And for us, it is relationship, not rules. That was our number one thing. It's relationship, not rules, relationship, not rules. So David and I wrote a book called Start Here. It's short. It's about 100 pages, little book. Start Here, Beginning a Relationship with Jesus. And we just laid out those like six or seven things that we want people to know. We have people from our community who added testimonies. We have some adult testimonies that are just good. It's just a conversation starter. That's the hope, is that someone who feels not equipped to even sit in the first service would be given something that can help them have a starting point and a foundation. And we felt like we wanted to make sure